pretty people have it easier than uglies. It smacks of cliche, and yet the lovelies of this world, defensive to the grave, will say, "Tain't so." They will contend that nice makes it harder for them. They get hustled more, people try to use them more, and to hear girls tell it, their good looks are nothing but curse, curse, curse. But stop to think. At least a good-looking human being has that much going for openers. Plain to not-so-nice-at-all folk have to really jump for every little crumb. Things come harder to them. The reasoning of the rationale is a simple one. We worship the Pepsi generation. We have a pathological lemming drive to conceal our age, lift our faces, dress like overblown Shirley Temples, black that gray in the hair, live a lie. Whatever happened to growing old gracefully, the reverence of maturity, the search for character as differentiated from superficial comeliness? It be a disease, I warn you. It will rot you from the inside while the outside glows. It will escalate into a culture that can never tolerate the discarded. Bedzik saw Rilla go mad and watched her throw herself against the Lucite port till her pinhead was a red blotch of pulped flesh and blood. He sighed and sucked deeply from his massive bellows chest and wondered how he, of all the discards, had been silently nominated the leader. The ship hung in space between the moon and earth, unwanted, unnoticed, a raft adrift in the sea of night. Around him in the ship's saloon, the others watched Rilla killing herself, and when her body fell to the rug, they turned away, allowing Bedzik his choice of who was to dispose of her. He chose John Smith, the one with feathers where hair should have been, and the nameless one who clanged instead of talking. The two of them lifted her heavy body with its tiny pea of a head and carried her to the garbage port. They emptied it, opened it, tossed her inside, redogged, and blew her out. She floated past the saloon window on her way sunward. In a moment, she was lost. Bedzik sat down in a deep chair and drew breath whistlingly into his mighty chest. It was a chore being leader of these people. People? No, that was certainly not the word. These discards. That was a fine willowy word to use. They were scrap, refuse, waste, garbage. How fitting for Rilla to have gone that way out the garbage port. They would all bid goodbye that way someday. He noted there was no day on the ship, but some good something, maybe day, maybe night, each of them would go sucking out that port like the garbage. It had to be that way. They were discards. But people? No, they were not people. People did not have hooks where hands should have been, nor one eye, nor carapaces, nor humps on chests and backs, nor fins, nor any of the other mutations these residents of the ship sported. People were normal, evenly matched sets of arms and legs and eyes, evenly matched husbands, wives, evenly distributed throughout the solar system, and evenly dividing the goods of the system between themselves and the frontier worlds at the edge, and all happily disposed to let the obscene discards die in their prison ship. "She's gone." He had pursed his lips, had sunk his perfectly normal head onto his gigantic chest, and had been thinking. Now he looked up at the speaker. It was John Smith, with feathers where hair should have been. "I said she's gone." Bedzik nodded without replying. Rilla had been just one more. Pro forma. They had already lost over 200 discards from the ship. There would be more. Strange how these... He hesitated again to use the word people, finally settled on the word they used among themselves, creatures. These creatures had steeled themselves to the death of one of their kind. Or perhaps they considered others of their group more malformed than themselves. Each person on the ship was different. No two had been affected by the sickness in the same way. The very fibers of the muscles had altered with some of these creatures, making their limbs useless. On others, the pores had clogged on their skin surfaces, eliminating all hair. On still others, strange juices had been secreted in the bloodstream, causing weird growths to erupt where smoothness had been. But perhaps each one thought he was less hideous than the others. It was conceivable. Bedzik knew his great chest was not nearly as unpleasant to look upon as, say, Sam Swope's spiny crest and twin heads. In fact, Bedzik mused wryly, many people might think it was becoming, this great wedge of a chest, all matted with dark hair and heroic seeming. The others are pretty miserable to look at, but not me, especially. Yes, it was conceivable. In any case, they paid no attention now if one of their group killed himself. They turned away. Most of them were better off dead, anyhow. Then he caught himself. He was starting to get like the rest of them. He had to stop thinking like that. It wasn't right. No one should be allowed to take death like that. He resolved. The next one would be stopped, and he would deliver them a stern warning and tell the discards that they would find landfall soon, and to buck up. But he knew he would sit and watch the next time as he had this time, for he had made the same resolve before Rilla had gone. Sam Swope came into the saloon. He had been on KP all day, and both his heads were dripping with sweat, and picked his way among the conversing group of discards to the seat beside Bedzik. It was a greeting. He was identifying his arrival.
Hi, Sam. How was it?
Metsu Mets, he said,
imitating Scalamina, the one-eyed ex-plumber of Sicilian descent, tipping his hand in an obvious Scalaminian gesture.
I'll live, unfortunately.
He added the last word with only a little drop of humor.
Did I ever tell you the one about the candy-ass Canadian boilsucker?
He didn't even smile as he said it, with either head. Bedzik nodded wearily. He didn't want to play that game.
Yeah, well,
Sam Swope said wearily. He sat silently for several long moments, then added with irony,
but did I tell you I was married to her?
His wife had turned him in. Morbidity ran knee-deep on the ship. Rilla killed herself a little bit ago, Bedzik said carelessly. There was no other way to say it.
I figured as much, Sam Swope said. I saw them carrying her past the galley to the garbage lock. That's number 6 this week alone. You going to do anything, Bedzik?
Bedzik abruptly twisted in his chair. He leveled a gaze at a spot directly between Sam Swope's two heads. His words were bitter with helplessness and anger that the burden should be placed upon him.
What do you mean, what am I going to do? I'm a prisoner here, too. When they had the big roundup, I got snatched away from a wife and 3 kids, the same as you got pulled away from your used car lot. What the hell do you want me to do? Beg them not to bash their heads against the Lucite? It'll smear our nice north view of space?
Sam Swope wiped both hands across his faces simultaneously in a weary pattern. The blue eyes of his left head closed and the brown eyes of his right head blinked quickly. His left head, which had been speaking, nodded onto his chest. His right head, the nearly dumb one, mumbled incoherently. Sam Swope's left head jerked up, and a look of disgust and hatred clouded his eyes.
Shut up, you fucking moron!
He cracked his right head with a full fist. Bedzik watched without pity. The first time he'd seen Sam Swope flail himself, would flagellate be a better term? He had pitied the mutant. But it was a constant thing now, the way Sam Swope took his agony out on the dumb head. And there were times Bedzik thought Sam Swope was better off than most. At least he had a release valve, an object of hate.
Take it easy, Sam.
Nothing's gonna help us. Not a single lousy thing.
Sam Swope snapped a look at Bedzik, then catalogued the thick arms and huge chest of the man, and wearily murmured,
"Oh, I don't know, Bedzik. I don't know."
He dropped his left head into his hands. The right one winked at Bedzik with the archness of an imbecile. Bedzik shuddered and looked away.
"If only we could have made that landing on Venus," Sam Swope intoned from the depths of his hands. "If only they'd let us in."
"You ought to know by now, Sam. There's no room for us in the system at all. No room on Earth and nowhere else. They've got allocations and quotas and assignments. So many to Io, so many to Callisto, so many to Luna and Venus and Mars and any place else you might want to settle down. No room for discards, no room in space at all." Across the saloon, three fishmen, their heads encased in bubbling clear helmets, had gotten into a squabble, and two of them were trying to open the petcock on the third's helmet. This was something else again. The third fishman was struggling. He didn't want to die gasping. This was not a suicide, but a murder, if they let it go unchecked. Bedzik leaped to his feet and hurled himself at the two attacking fishmen. He caught one by the bicep and spun him. His fist was half-cocked before he realized one solid blow would shatter the water globe surrounding the fish face, would kill the mutant. Instead, he took him around and shoved him solidly by the back of the shoulders toward the compartment door. The fishman stumbled away, breathing bubbly imprecations into his life water, casting furious glances back at his companions. The second fishman came away of his own accord and followed the first from the saloon. Bedzik helped the last fishman to a relaxer and watched disinterestedly as the mutant let a fresh supply of air bubbles into the circulating water in the globe. The fishman mouthed a lipless thanks, and Bedzik passed it away with a gesture. He went back to his seat. Sam Swope was massaging the dumb head.
"Those three'll never grow up."
Bedzik fell into the chair.
"You wouldn't be too happy living inside a goldfish bowl yourself, Swope."
Sam Swope stopped massaging the wrinkled yellow skin of the dumb head, seemed prepared to snap a retort, but a blip and clear squawk from the intercom stopped him.
"Bedzik! Bedzik, you down there?"
It was the voice of Harmony Teat up in the drive room.
Why was it they always called him? Why did they persist in making him their arbiter?
"Yeah, I'm here in the saloon. What's up?"
The squawk box blipped again, and Harmony Teat's mellow voice came to him from the ceiling.
"I just registered a ship coming in on us, off about 3:30. I checked through the ephemeris and the shipping schedules. Nothing's supposed to be out there. What should I do? You think it's a custom ship from Earth?"
Bedzik heaved himself to his feet. He sighed.
"No, I don't think it's a customs ship. They threw us out, but I doubt if they have the imagination or gall to extract tithe from us being here. I don't know what it might be, Harmony. Hold everything and record any signals they send. I'm on my way up ship."
He strode quickly out of the saloon and up the cross-leveled ramps toward the drive room. Not till he had passed the hydroponics level did he realize Sam Swope was behind him.
I thought I'd come along, Bed,"
Sam Swope said apologetically, wringing his small red hands.
"I didn't want to stay down there with those freaks."
His dumb head hung off to one side, sleeping fitfully. Bedzik didn't answer. He turned on his heel and continued up decks, not looking back. There was no trouble. The ship identified itself when it was well away. It was an attaché carrier from System Central in Butte, Montana, Earth. The supercargo was a spec attaché named Curran. When the ship pulled alongside the discard vessel and jockeyed for grappling position, Harmony Teat, her long gray-green hair reaching down past the spiked projections on her spinal column, threw on the attract field for that section of the hull. The Earth ship clunked against the discard vessel, and the locks were synced in. Curran came across without a suit.
He was a slim, incredibly tanned young man with a crew cut clipped so short a patch of nearly bald showed at the center of his scalp. His eyes were alert and his manner was brisk and friendly, that of the professional dignitary in the Foreign Service. Bedzik didn't bother with amenities.
"What do you want?"
"Who may I be addressing, sir, if I may ask?" Curran was the perfect model of diplomacy.
"Bedzik is what I was called on Earth.
Cool, disdainful, I may be hideous, but I still have a little pride.
My name is Curran, Mr. Bedzik, Alan Curran of System Central. I've been asked to come out and speak to you about..."
Bedzik settled against the bulkhead opposite the lock, not even offering the attaché an invitation to return to the saloon.
"You want us to get out of your sky, is that it? You stinking lousy..."
He faltered in fury. He was so angry, he couldn't even finish the sentence.
"You set off too many bombs down there, and eventually some of us with something in our bloodstream reacted to it and we turned into monsters. And what do? You call it the sickness and you pack us up whether we want to go or not, and you shove us into space."
"Mr. Bedzik, I..."
"You what? You damned well what, Mr. System Central? With your straight clean body and your nice home on Earth, and your allocations of how many people live where to keep the balance of culture just so, you what? You want to invite us to leave? Okay, we'll go."
He was nearly screeching, his face crimson with emotion. His big hands knotted at his sides for fear he would strike this emissary.
"We'll get out of your sky. We've been all the way out to the edge, Mr. Curran, and there's no room in space for us anywhere. They won't let us land even on the frontier worlds where we can pay our way. Oh no, contamination, they think. Okay, don't shove, Curran. We'll be going."
He started to turn away, was nearly down the passageway, when Curran's solid voice stopped him.
"Bedzik!"
The wedge-chested man turned. Curran was unsticking the seam that sealed his jumper top. He pulled it open and revealed his chest. It was covered with leprous green and brown sores. His face was a blasted thing then. He was a man with sickness, who wanted to know how he had acquired it, how he could be rid of it. On the ship, they called Curran's particular deformity the runnies. Bedzik walked back slowly, his eyes never leaving Curran's face.
"They sent you to talk to us?"
Bedzik asked, wondering. Curran resealed the jumper and nodded. He laid a hand on his chest as though wishing to be certain the sores would not run off and leave him. A terror swam brightly in his young eyes.
"It's getting worse down there, Bedzik. There are more and more changing every day. I've never seen anything like it."
He hesitated, shuddered. He ran a hand over his face and swayed slightly, as though whatever memory he now clutched to himself was about to make him faint.
I'd like to sit down.
Bedzik took him by the elbow and led him up a few steps toward the saloon. Then Dresden, the girl with the glass hands, who wore monstrous cotton-filled gloves, came out from the connecting passage leading to the saloon, and Bedzik thought of the 100 weird forms Curran would have to face. In his condition, that would be bad. He turned the other way and led Curran back up to the drive room. Bedzik waved at a control chair.
"Have a seat."
Curran looked collegiate boy shook up. He sank into the chair, again touching his chest in disbelief.
"I've been like this for over 2 months. They haven't found out yet. I've tried to keep myself from showing it." He was shivering wildly.
Bedzik perched on the shelf of the plot tank and crossed his legs. He folded his arms across his huge chest and looked at Curran.
"What do they want down there? What do they want from their beloved discards?"
He savored the last word with the taste of alum.
It's so bad you won't believe it, Bedzik."
He ran a hand through his crew cut nervously.
"We thought we had the sickness licked. There was every reason to believe the atmosphere spray Terra Pharmaceuticals developed would end it. They sprayed the entire planet. But something they didn't even know was in the spray, something they only half suspected in the sickness, combined to produce a healthier strain. That was when it started getting bad. What had been a
A hit-and-miss thing with just a few like yourselves, with some weakness in your bloodstreams making you susceptible, became a rule instead of an exception. People started changing while you watched.
He faltered again, shuddered at a memory. My fiancée, he said, looking at his attaché case in his hands. I was eating lunch with her in Rockefeller Plaza's Skytop. We had to be back at work in Butte in 20 minutes, just time to catch a cab, and she changed while we were sitting there. Her eyes, they, I can't explain it. You can't know what it was like seeing them water and run down her cheeks like that. It was...
His face tightened up as though he were trying to keep himself from going completely insane. Bedzik sharply curbed the hysteria. We have 7 people like that on board right now.
I know what you mean. And they aren't the worst. Go on, you were saying.
Such prosaic acceptance of the horror brought Curran's frenzy down.
It got so bad. Everyone was staying in the sterile shelters. The streets, always empty. It was horrible.
Then some quack physician out in Cincinnati or somewhere like that came up with an answer. A serum made from a secretion in the bloodstreams of...
Bedzik added the last word for him.
Of discards?
Curran nodded soberly. Bedzik's hard-edged laugh rattled against Curran's thin film of calm. A furious expression came over his face.
What are you laughing at? We need your help. We need all you people as blood donors.
Bedzik stopped laughing. Why not use the changed ones from down there? He jerked a thumb at the big lucite viewport, where Earth hung swollen and multicolored. What's wrong with them? And he added with malice. With you?
Curran twitched as he realized he could so easily be lumped in with the afflicted.
We're no good. We were changed by this new mutated sickness. The secretion is different in our blood than it is in yours. You were stricken by the primary sickness, or virus, or whatever they call it. We have a secondary strain, but the way the research has outlined it, the only ones who have what we need are you dis...
He caught himself.
You people who were shipped out before the sickness mutated.
Bedzik snorted contemptuously. He let a wry, astonished smirk tickle his lips.
You Earthies are fantastic.
He shook his head in private amusement.
He slipped off the plot tank's ledge and turned to the port, talking half to himself, half to a non-existent third person in the drive room.
These fuckers are unbelievable. Can you imagine? Can you picture it?
Astonishment rang in his disbelief at the proposal.
First, they hustle us into a metal prison and shoot us out here to die alone. They don't want any part of us. Go away, they say. Then, when the trouble comes to them, too big, they run after us. Can you help us, please, you dirty, ugly things? Help us, nice, clean Earthies.
He spun suddenly.
Get out of here. Get off this ship. We won't help you.
You have your allotments and your quotas for each world.
Curran broke in.
Yes, that's it. If the population goes down much more, they've been killing themselves. Riots, it's terrible. Then the balance will be changed, and our entire system culture will bend and fall, and...
Bedzik cut him off, finishing what he had been saying.
Yes, you have your dirty little quotas, but you have no room for us. Well, we've got no room for you. Now get the hell off this ship. We don't want to help you.
Curran leaped to his feet.
You can't send me away like this. You don't speak for all of them aboard. You can't treat a Terran emissary this way.
Bedzik had him by the jumper and had propelled him toward the closed companionway door before the attaché knew what was happening. He hit the door and rebounded. As he stumbled back toward Bedzik, the great-chested mutant snatched the briefcase from beside the control chair and slammed it into Curran's stomach.
Here. Here's your offer and your lousy demands, and get off this ship. We don't want any part of you.
The door crashed open. And the discards were there. They filled the corridor as far back as the angle where cross passages ran off toward the saloon and galley. They shoved and nudged each other to get a view into the drive room. Sam Swope and Harmony Teat and Dresden were in the front, and from somewhere Samswap had produced an effectively deadly little rasp pistol. He held it tightly, threateningly, and Bedzik felt flattered that they had come to his aid.
"You don't need that, Sam. Mr. Curran was just leave—"
Then he realized. The rasp was pointed not at Curran, but at him. He stood frozen, one hand still clutching Curran's sleeve, as Curran bellied the briefcase to himself.
"Dresden overheard it all, Mr. Curran,"
Sam Swope said in a pathetically ingratiating tone.
"He wants us to rot on this barge."
He gestured at Bedzik with his free hand as the dumbhead nodded certain agreement.
"What offer can you make us? Can we go home, Mr. Curran?"
There was a whimpering and a pleading in Sam Swope's voice that Bedzik had only sensed before. He tried to break in.
"Are you insane, Swope? Putty! That's all you are, putty, when you see a fake hope that you'll get off this ship. Can't you see they just want to use us? Can't you understand that?"
Sam Swope's face grew florid, and he screamed,
"Shut up! Just shut up and let Curran talk! We don't want to die on this ship. You may like it, you little tin god, but we hate it here. So shut up and let him talk."
Curran spoke rapidly then.
"If you allow us to send a medical detachment up here to use you as blood donors, I have the word of the System Central that you will all be allowed to land on Earth and will have a reservation for you so you can live some kind of normal lives again."
"Hey, what's the matter with you?"
Bedzik again burst in, trying vainly to speak over the hubbub from the corridor.
"Can't you see he's lying? They'll use us and then desert us again."
Samsoap growled menacingly.
"If you don't shut up, I'll kill you, Bedzik."
Bedzik faltered into silence and watched the scene before him.
They were melting. They were going to let this rotten turncoat emissary blind them with false hopes.
"We've worked our allotments around, so there's space for you. Perhaps in the new green valleys of South America, or on the Veltland in Rhodesia. It will be wonderful, but we need your blood. We need your help."
"Don't trust him. Don't believe him. You can't believe an Earthman,"
Bedzik shouted, stumbling forward to wrest the rasp pistol from Samswope's grip. Samswope fired point blank. First, the rasp of the power spurting from the muzzle of the tiny pistol filled the drive room, then the smell of burning flesh, and Bedzik's eyes opened wide in pain. He screamed thinly and staggered back against Curran. Curran stepped aside and Bedzik mewed in agony and crumpled onto the deck. A huge hole had been seared through his huge chest. Huge chest, huge death. And he lay there with his eyes open, barely forming the words,
"Don't, you can't trust an earth—"
with his bloody lips. Curran's face had paled out till it was a blotch against the dark blue of his jumper. Sam Swope moved into the drive room and took Curran by the sleeve, almost where Bedzik had held it.
"You promise us we can land and be allowed to settle someplace on Earth?"
Curran nodded dumbly. Had they demanded Earth in its socket of orbit, he would have nodded agreement. Samswope still held the rasp.
"All right, then. Get your med detachment up here and get that blood. We want to go home, Mr. Curran. We want to go home more than anything."
They led him to the lock. Beside him, Curran saw three mutants lifting the blasted body of Bedzik, bearing it on their shoulders through the crowd. The body was borne out of sight down a cross corridor, and Curran followed it out of sight with his eyes. Beside him, Sam Swope said,
"To the garbage lock. We go that way, Mr. Curran."
His tones were hard and uncompromising.
"We don't like going that way, Mr. Curran. We want to go home. You'll see to it, won't you, Mr. Curran?"
Curran again nodded dumbly and entered the lock linking the ships. 10 hours later, the med detachment came up. The discards were completely obedient and tremendously helpful. It took nearly 11 months to inoculate the entire population of the Earth and the rest of the system, strictly as preventative caution dictated. And during that time, no more discards took their lives. Why should they? They were going home. Soon the tugs would come and help jockey the big discard vessel into orbit for the run to Earth. They were going home. There was room for them now, even in their condition. Spirits ran high, and laughter tinkled oddly down the passageways in the evenings. There was even a wedding between Arkay, who was blind and had a bushy tail, and a pretty young thing the others called Danai, for she could not speak for herself. Without a mouth, that was impossible. At the ceremony in the saloon, Sam Swope acted as minister, for the discards had made him their leader in the same silent way they had made Bedzik the leader before him. Spirits ran high, and the constant knowledge that as soon as Earth had the sickness under control, they would be going home kept them patient. 11 months. Then, one afternoon, the ship came. Not the little tugs, as they had supposed, but a cargo ship nearly as big as their own home. Sam Swope rushed to sink in the locks, and when the red lights merged on the board, he locked the two together firmly and scrambled back through the throng to be the first to greet the men who would deliver them. When the lock sighed open, and they saw the first 10 who had been thrust in, they knew the truth. One had a head flat as a plate, with no eyes, and its mouth in its neck. Another had several 100,000 slimy tentacles where arms should have been, and waddled on stumps that could never again be legs. Still another was brought in by a pair of huge, empty-faced men in a bowl. The bowl contained a yellow jelly, and swimming in the yellow jelly was the woman. Then they knew. They were not going home. As lockful after lockful of more discards came through to swell their ranks even more, they knew these were the last of the tainted ones from Earth. The last ones who had been stricken by the sickness, who had changed before the serum could save them. These were the last, and now the Earth was clean. Sam Swope watched them trail in, some dragging themselves on appendageless torsos, others in baskets, still others with one arm growing from a chest or hair that was blue and fungus growing out all over the body. He watched them and knew the man he had killed had been correct. For among the crowd he glimpsed a bare-chested discard with huge sores on his body. Curran. And as the cargo ship unlocked and swept back to Earth with the silent warning, "Don't follow us, don't try to land, there's no room for you here," Sam Swope could hear Bedzik's hysterical tones in his head. "Don't trust them. There's no room for us anywhere. Don't trust them. You can't trust an Earthman." Sam Swope started walking slowly toward the galley, knowing he would need someone to seal the garbage lock after him. But it didn't matter who it was. There were more than enough discards aboard now.